The following is a special presentation of ESPN College Football on ABC.
From the men who brought you basically a sports show, if your football fix wasn't met on Thursday night, it's time for an additional slice. This is basically a football show right now. Let's go!
3 seconds, 2 seconds, there's the snap. Bo looking to throw, throws the end zone, Walton, he's got it! Forget the field goal, the Rebels have a touchdown!
Here we go, 7 seconds, Berkovici. He's just going to air it out deep downfield, and no white shirts around.
Oh, Jalen Strong! Caught for a touchdown! Jalen Strong makes the catch for the touchdown, and the Sun Devils have won the game on a Hail Mary on the final play!
Hey, baby! We're going to be here all day, baby! I like this kind of party! I like this kind of party, baby!
His method is not Grand Prix, but Demolition Derby.
Welcome to one of the most exciting editions of Basically a Football Show you're ever going to hear. I'm Zach, along with me is Greg. And Greg, this weekend in football, NFL was... There were some decent games in the NFL, a good weekend in the NFL, but we have to start in college with one of the... probably the craziest weekend when it comes to knocking off ranked teams in college football history.
Yeah, I can't remember. I mean, there have been times where you'd see maybe one or two teams, and you'd get a weekend where a lot of ranked teams lost, but never what happened in the top 10 have I ever seen before. I think I heard it hasn't. I was going to say, I think I heard a thing where it had never happened before since they started doing the poll. Yeah, it was crazy.
Number 3, number 4, number 6, number 8 all go down. The first time that 5 teams within the top 10 all went down in a single week. And then not to mention losing all 14 through 19 in the rankings. 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 all also go down. Just so for a total of 11 ranked teams of the top 25 that lost on Saturday and Thursday and Friday, just absolutely insane. And, you know, but this is something that we like because I put this on the boards. I think college football is better. Is at its best when you either have a few elite teams that just run rampant over everything, or you have absolute chaos. And for the first couple of weeks, we were kind of in this middle ground where there wasn't that many. The teams that were good weren't that good, and the rest of the top 20 wasn't very good at all. They were kind of up and down. But now that you have all this turnover, it makes it for a little bit more of an exciting college football season.
Absolutely, this is when it's at its best. Is when it's chaos. And the nice thing about it this year is that at least, I guess, if you're an Alabama fan or along those lines, you're not out of it yet. But it sure makes things interesting now because all of a sudden you've got teams that we thought were going to be in the elite come the end of the season for the playoff that now they're going to have to really work hard to get back into the mix. It was just – I loved it. I mean, I wish every weekend was like this, but it was just the greatest. It was awesome.
I mean – when it comes to the playoff picture, and we can talk about this more later, I think the winners, at least coming out of this weekend, are the SEC, because they definitely have the potential to get two teams in there into that playoff if things keep going the way this is.
Right.
And I think Michigan State, if they can run the rest of the table and win the Big Ten with the amount of chaos that's happening up front, we put them out a while ago, but maybe they're able to sneak back up in it because the Pac-12 has been knocked down a couple notches.
Yeah,
and Michigan State's still right up there in the top 10.
The Pac-12 is kind of disappointing me. I mean, I didn't think that there was going to be
cannibalizing itself.
Right, and I think we agreed at the beginning that if there was one of the Big Five conferences to not make it, it was either going to be the Big Ten or the Big 12. I still don't think the Big 12 has a team that'll get in, but now all of a sudden you're looking at the Pac-12 going, I don't know. And it puts Michigan State right back into the mix. And dare I say it, maybe the Ohio State Buckeyes, as the season progresses, get back into it a little bit too. We'll see. But it's going to be
nutty.
They're hanging around.
But let's get into it. We'll start where all this chaos began. On Thursday, there were a lot of people that were just kind of writing this off, where Oregon was playing Arizona in Oregon. They were both high-scoring teams, but Oregon still had a better defense. They were going to go right over the Wildcats.
And it's hard to play at Autzen Stadium the whole bit. Yeah.
Sure. A night game, Thursday, everyone's looking at you. It wasn't even going to be a contest, except that it ended up being quite the contest. As Arizona goes into Autzen Stadium, puts up 495 yards of offense, and takes down the Oregon Ducks, the number two Oregon Ducks, 31-24. And, you know, normally I'm not happy for an Arizona win in anything, but for them to knock off number two Oregon as 24-point underdogs, you know, Oregon looked a little kind of shaky in the previous week or in the game before this one against the Washington State, where they had to pull out a game that was going to go into overtime and it was only 38-31. But they hung around and they got to it.
It's this is the thing that surprises me the most about this game, I think, outside of Arizona winning, is the score is actually pretty low for these two teams. There was more defense being played in this than I think anybody would have ever thought. But, yeah, Oregon's out now, and I think they still got a couple tough games left on their schedule. So they could have just knocked themselves right out of the picture at this point.
Right. Well, I mean, Oregon, they don't get any rest. I mean, they go right back and play at UCLA this week.
And they still have Stanford, and a pretty good Utah team is still there. You know, all of a sudden, they could be right out of the picture just like that.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple interesting penalty calls that went against Oregon late, but I don't know. You know why Oregon lost, Greg?
Okay.
Because they were wearing black uniforms with pink accents. Their uniform nature caught up to them.
Well, it's about time.
You know, they got to celebrate breast cancer awareness.
Yeah, black and pink for a team that's normal colors are green and yellow.
Did you see the uniforms?
No, I did not.
Well,
I try to avoid Oregon's uniforms because they're mostly an eyesore. Although they did, I think it was a couple years ago, they came out with the green and gold that I really liked.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
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 Oh, you got to see the back of these. Oh no, that's just see through mesh. But yeah, it's I appreciate the cause, and we can talk more about this when we get to the NFL, because there was an interesting thing when it came to the NFL in the pink. But yeah, I mean, it just makes you look all the worse when you end up losing if you look that ridiculous. But number two, Oregon knocked off. They're still on top of the Pac-12 North, but the whole pack, I think. And we can talk about this when we're done with the rankings, because there's a couple other interesting games among the non-ranked teams. The Pac-12 is probably the most entertaining conference from top to bottom. So maybe it's just all the teams are – there's so much offense.
Right.
It's almost like the old Big 12, where there was no defense ever being played and it was all air raid offenses.
Exactly.
So, you know, if you can throw the ball, you're not out of it in any Pac-12 game.
Yeah, there's just no defense being played in that conference at all these days.
No. But so number two, Oregon goes down. We move on to the very next day, Friday, and a game that we said that you should keep an eye out for, and, you know, BYU and Utah State, two in-state rivals. BYU at home goes down 35-20 to Utah State. Now, the interesting thing with this is for the third straight season, the starting quarterback for either of the two teams got injured. 2 years ago, it was BYU quarterback Taysom Hill. He got injured against Utah State, and Utah State ended up winning the game. Last year, it was Chucky Keaton. Sorry,
Chucky Keaton, right.
Who got injured last year, and BYU ended up the victors. Then we go into this year, and Chucky Keaton gets injured again. Taysom Hill gets injured again, but Taysom Hill out for the rest of the year. And on a night where Jim McMahon's number 9 jersey was being retired by the BYU Cougars.
Really?
Yeah, Utah State goes in and upsets number 18, 35-20.
Well, this was when we said to watch, because Utah State can score a lot of points, but I didn't expect them. I mean, this wasn't just a win, it wasn't just an upset. That was kind of a blowout. I mean, they really didn't have a lot of trouble. Now, a lot of times you can say, well, it's a starting quarterback thing and all that, but Utah State is not a bad team, and I'm just a little surprised that BYU lost by as much as they did. Then again, those all-blue uniforms probably didn't help matters either.
No. No, I mean, and it really was just the two starting quarterbacks got injured, and BYU's sub came in and threw three interceptions.
Yeah.
And that's not going to get you anywhere. Especially, I mean, it's an in-state rivalry. And, you know, These Utah teams, there's the triumvirate of Utah, Utah State, BYU, but they all have a different rivalry amongst themselves, whether it's, you know, the Mormons versus the Unsullied, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But they have some intense games. I mean, you're taking out quarterbacks left and right.
Well, you know, and the interesting thing about this too is that Utah State came into this. Chucky Keaton was already out for the season, so they were down to their number two quarterback already.
Yeah.
And it's just, this is one I wish I could have seen, because I like watching Brigham Young. I like watching these games because they're usually, you might not see the highest quality of football, but it's always very entertaining. And like you said, these Utah teams, man, they just beat up on each other, and it's pretty cool. But I'm not surprised so much that Utah State won, but I am a little bit surprised that they won so easily.
Yeah. We'll move on to Saturday, and we'll start with the number one team in the land, just to get that out of the way. And on a day that would end up being upset alert after upset alert after upset alert, Wake Forest was up 3-0 over Florida State after one quarter. I saw that on the bottom line. I'm like, I expected this in like the Alabama game or the Oklahoma game, but if Florida State were to lose to Wake Forest to start off the day, that would have just, I don't know what that would have done. That would have just made college football kind of take a week off, I think, next week. Like, we got to step back because I don't know what we're doing anymore. But things got turned around rather quickly as Florida State then proceeded to outscore Wake Forest 43-0 over the final three quarters in a 40-point blowout.
Not a lot to worry about in that one, but a Wake Forest upset over Florida State, that would have been huge. Now, obviously, it never came close to happening, but, yeah, that would have been really, really something.
Yeah, but this is the like third week in a row where Florida State's had a slow start, so something to look for with the Seminoles if they end up playing say Notre Dame in a couple weeks or any of the other ACC challenges that they probably won't face because they already beat Clemson.
I think I've been saying it all along. I just don't see these guys. Yes, they're ranked number one, but I don't see a team that I think is good enough to beat a few of the teams behind them. They're number one, right? And mostly now because they're left and everybody else kind of beat up on each other. But I'm not entirely sold on Florida State this year. So it'll be interesting to see once playoff time comes how they're going to fare, because I don't think they're as good as their record or their ranking would indicate.
Yeah. And their lead in first place votes has shrunken considerably over the weeks going by.
Yeah.
So they're number one default as they're the returning national champs and they haven't lost a game yet.
Right, I mean, they're there because no one's beaten them yet, but I think that
they're not the best team in the country.
No, I think even the voters that are voting for them at number one would probably tell you they don't think they're the best team either, but there's that mindset that when you come in, if you've won the national championship, you come in and you're number one until somebody knocks you off, which is, I guess, one way of looking at it, but, you know, you've got to take into account what you're seeing on the field every week, too, and on the field, this team does not look like the best team in the country.
No, definitely not. Let's move on to the gauntlet that was oh my God! There was a lot of these games all happening at once, and teams were just going down left and right. But we'll start down in Oxford, Mississippi, where Game Day made its first ever visit to the campus of Ole Miss. Katy Perry was on Game Day. Did you see any of that?
I saw some video from it. I don't understand why she was there.
Because her manager is an Ole Miss alum.
Okay,
and her manager, I guess, said eventually, like, you've never been to a college football game. We're going to get you to go to one. And that was 10 years ago, I guess. And now that they were on tour and they were happening to be by and she's famous and ESPN called her, they went to this game.
Okay.
She was there in her – she was wearing a carpet as a jersey.
I know.
And then she had the, like, red – bun thing, like I can't even describe it. And then there was like a point where she was throwing corn dogs all over the place.
Yeah, and then from my understanding too, she went out and got pretty drunk that night. And
yeah, I saw some of the videos of that.
Yeah, I still don't. I understand. I don't understand why she was there. I mean, she really has literally.
Because they have these celebrity pickers every week.
Yeah, and, but
you know, like I guess they couldn't find anyone else from Mississippi. You know who's from Mississippi that probably would have done a good job? Or I think he still lives there, is Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
He owns like a jazz bar.
I would have taken him a lot more seriously, but
well,
anyway.
I mean, of course. I mean, she was picking teams based on their uniform colors and because the quarterback was cute and like She set women on TV back a few decades.
Well, picking because of the uniforms, that's something that, you know, that's a girl after our heart right there. But I don't know. But anyway.
She didn't know a damn thing about college football. But anyway, to the game itself, holy cow, what a game this was. Ole Miss, both teams were kind of feeling each other out. It was kind of like a boxing match early on. Ole Miss ends the first quarter with a 3-0 lead. And then in the second quarter, Ole Miss just got some bad luck. Alabama scored a touchdown to go up 7-3. And on the ensuing, I think the first play after the kickoff, Alabama got a huge break where the Alabama defender went in and stripped the ball and returned it for a touchdown. But on replay, you could see that there was a clear face mask that turned the Ole Miss player loose in the football. Alabama goes back for the touchdown. And it's 14-3, and it's a quick swing, and maybe things start turning in Alabama's favor. But give credit to Ole Miss. They hung around. They go into the fourth quarter and score 13 points to get that come-from-behind victory. And Alabama gets the ball with plenty of time left. And they go down, and they get one Hail Mary into the end zone, intercepted by Ole Miss. And the Ole Miss Rebels, 5-0, 2-0 in the SEC. They knock off number 3 Alabama. I think it's their first ever win against a top 5 team at home, and they get the victory and they move up all the way to number 3 in the rankings.
Well, you know, the thing about Ole Miss is that every season they're ranked, and every season they're kind of like the Cardinals in the NFL used to be. Is this the year they're going to? And you every year they'd come in ranked, and then they would end up losing a game they shouldn't have lost. And they fall right back out again. This year, they came in ranked, and they finally, I think, took the step they needed to take by beating Alabama. They might just be for real this time around.
And Nick Saban has a tenuous relationship with kickers. he probably has an even worse one now. Their field goal kicker went 1-for-3 on Saturday, and Alabama is 5-for-16 on field goals in its past 5 losses.
I heard this brought up on one of the podcasts I was listening to. Don't you think that Alabama being Alabama, that they should have the best field goal kicker in the country?
But, you know, it's one of those things that it's a position that some guys will just overlook.
Yeah, but
and, you know, it's like, we don't need a kicker. We're going to score a bunch of points. What does it matter? But then when you get in a tight game like this, then all of a sudden the kicker's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you lose because of it. And where's the penalty yards? Yeah, the Alabama, I think I heard this right on the broadcast. In Nick Saban's tenure as the Alabama head football coach, there has never been a game where Alabama had more penalty yards than its opposition. And they did in this game, 8 penalties for 52 yards, 2 Ole Misses, 3 penalties for 25 yards. So
I just think that with Nick Saban, I mean, we saw this problem last year in the Auburn game. Kicking hurt them a lot. And you would just think that, okay, maybe he does think we're going to score a lot of points. But I think history has proven at this point there are going to be times, even if you're the Alabama Crimson Tide, where you're going to need a good kicker.
I mean, look at the Auburn game last year, you know?
That's exactly it. Yeah, that's what I was just saying.
I mean, that was probably also a dumb call to kick it from that far. But
more often than not, the Tide aren't going to need a good kicker, but I think that especially with that stat you just gave us, it shows that there are going to be times, maybe you don't go out and recruit the best kicker in the country, but you get a guy that you can rely on a little bit at least.
Some other quick notes. Alabama had more punts in this game than it had in its previous 4 games combined. Bo Wallace, the quarterback there for Ole Miss, threw 3 second-half touchdown passes against Alabama, joining Johnny Manziel, who threw 4, as the only player to throw that many in the second half against Alabama under Nick Saban. Wallace is also one of 5 players to throw 3 touchdowns without an interception against Alabama in the last 10 seasons, and Alabama lost each of those 5 games. From number 3 going down to number 4 as Oklahoma goes to TCU and the Horned Frogs in Fort Worth. This was a typical Big 12 game, just points all over the damn place. They were tied at 14 all after the first quarter, tied at 24 all after the second quarter, tied at, 31 each after the third quarter? 30 each after the third quarter. And it was a weird kind of back and forth. When I was watching the game, I was kind of cutting into it, going through all the games because there were so many at the 12 o'clock or 3:30 time slot. It just seemed it was one of those games where, yeah, they're going back and forth, but Oklahoma's eventually going to takeover.
Right.
They're better. You would think that they're better. And TCU, while it's a good effort, you know, they're just going to keep going. They're going to keep going. But their defense stepped up there in the fourth quarter. They got a safety, or Oklahoma got a safety, excuse me. But TCU, they were able to hold down that passing attack, get those two field goals, and they got an interception return for a touchdown. Big fourth down stop there late in the fourth quarter to seal a 37-33 victory over the number four Sooners.
Yep. And Oklahoma, another team that I thought was ranked probably a little bit higher than their talent level, but TCU is, even when they're not in the running for what used to be BCS Bowls and all, they're always a pretty tough program.
By the way, we mentioned that Ole Miss goes up to number three. Alabama slides down to seven. TCU goes all the way up to nine. And Oklahoma just slides down to 11. Does that seem right?
No.
To lose to the number 25 team? I mean, it was a tight game, I know.
Yeah, but I don't think Oklahoma was – I don't think that even now at 11, I still think they're ranked a little more highly than they should be.
The real interesting thing, and we forgot to mention this after the Thursday game, Arizona, according to the actual AP website, they were 29 in terms of voting. They move from outside the top 25 all the way up to number 10, which is the highest entry into the top 25 after being unranked in the poll's 70-year history. No team has ever gone from unranked to number 10 after one win.
And you know what? I mean, more power to them.
That's garbage.
Yeah, it is. That's
Arizona, they're 5-0. They are not number 10 team in the country.
No.
I'm sorry.
They beat Oregon in Oregon, but come on. I mean, to go from unranked to number 10, that's absurd. I could see if they make it up into, say, in the, you know, the 17 on down range, but to go all the way to 10th, based on one win, and especially beating an Oregon team that had trouble with Washington State last week, but that's just an overreaction.
Arizona had to pull out a tight game against University of Texas San Antonio.
Exactly.
What the hell is that? No, I Arizona's my new UCLA, by the way. This is garbage. They need to lose immediately so they could get back into
that is nonsense. That is just such a staggering overreaction to one win.
Now we get to, I think they're the best team in the country right now, the Auburn Tigers blow out the LSU Tigers 41-7. I think the real key to this game, though, LSU was starting a true freshman at quarterback in this game.
Okay.
And Auburn just came out hard and fast, offensively and defensively. Nick Marshall, the quarterback for the Auburn Tigers, 207 yards passing, 119 rushing. LSU switched quarterbacks a couple times in the game. They only managed 8 completions the entire game.
Ouch.
Auburn scored on its first 4 possessions to lead 31-7 at the half and just bowled over LSU at Auburn, 41-7.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this Auburn team it should be ranked number one. I think they're the best team in the country. And even a lesser LSU team, that's still a pretty impressive victory to get over an SEC team maybe overrated, but still pretty good.
Auburn hasn't shown me any reason to doubt that they're good. I mean, their tightest game was on the road on a Thursday night at Kansas State, 20-14. I mean, I'm just looking at their schedule. Holy crap, what a gauntlet they have. They go to Mississippi State this week. Then they host South Carolina, who loses inexplicably to Kentucky. Like, come on, South Carolina.
It's not inexplicable at all. They're the poor man's Clemson. Come on.
And then the week after they go to Ole Miss. Then they host Texas A&M, go to Georgia, host Samford,
right,
and finish up on the road at Alabama.
If they can run that gauntlet and come out undefeated, then they should be number one.
If they can run that gauntlet, they should just get the national title right then and there. They shouldn't have to go through the playoff, because all that is more opportunities for them to be just banged up, beat up, and lose. So there's 7 games left in their season, only 2 of which are against unranked teams currently.
Right.
And 3 of those games are top 10 teams.
With their schedule being what it is, I think even if they come out of it with one loss, you still got to take a real hard look at them as a playoff team.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they can go through just with one loss, and whether it's to Mississippi State this week or Ole Miss or even Alabama, you know, it'll be a good loss no matter what. I don't see them losing to South Carolina or Samford.
This conference is brutal. It's just brutal. It's as simple as that. I don't know that of all the years of the SEC's dominance over the past years, I don't know if they've ever been this good top to bottom they are right now.
At least compared to the rest of college football.
Right, exactly.
We'll stay in the SEC for our next game as Texas A&M, they were number 6. They went on the road to Starkville and number 12, Mississippi State. And Texas A&M was never really in this game from the beginning. Mississippi State just passes all over the Texas Aggies. Texas makes it, or Texas A&M makes it a little bit closer at the end, but it, you know, 48 to 31, the final score with Mississippi State, the Bulldogs knocking off the Aggies. I don't know if this was just Texas A&M having a bad day or just Mississippi State is a heck of a lot better than anyone gave them credit for. I mean, they were number 12. They move all the way up to number 3 in the rankings. They're, and this is interesting. In the rankings, Mississippi State and Ole Miss are actually tied
yep.
spot in the poll, each with the same number of vote points. Mississippi State getting 2 first-place votes, though, so they're technically ahead of Ole Miss. But what a time to be a football fan in the state of Mississippi.
What are we at? Week 7 of the college football season, and we've got Ole Miss and Mississippi State tied for the number 3 spot.
Mississippi State and Ole Miss, they've never been ranked in the top 10 together.
When was the last time? I don't even know if the Egg Bowl's ever been relevant.
No.
As it could be this year. It's going to be something.
No. And Mississippi State, they're really strong up front. They're very physical up front. I like the way that they can run the ball. And that run sets up Dak Prescott in the pass. They're a dual threat on offense. I hadn't got a chance to watch them very much this year until this week. And I was very impressed. I really was. So definitely all eyes are going to be on Starkville, Mississippi next week.
Yeah, again.
As Auburn goes into town, like, what the hell?
When in the world ever has a week seven game in Starkville meant anything?
Never.
You know, and here we are. But that's what's so cool about this. It's just that not only did we get the big shakeup, but we've got teams that are really in uncharted territory for them right now, which is awesome.
We'll move on. Baylor. With a low number.
Yeah, what happened to Baylor?
For the Baylor Bears. Only 28 points, but they still beat Texas on the road. The Longhorns.
Yeah.
What a mess.
I think early on, I said, you know, they might be able to put it together because...
Yeah, I thought it too.
Not so much.
I thought they were my dark horse in the Big 12. But
not
no.
so much. Nope.
No. They play Oklahoma this week at the state fair. So maybe if they can knock off Oklahoma, they're not going to knock up Oklahoma.
No.
But we move on to probably my second favorite game of the week. Utah goes into the Rose Bowl and thank all that is holy, knock off UCLA 30-28. And what was a tight back and forth game. Utah was up for the majority of it. UCLA got 14 points there in the fourth quarter to get within striking distance. UCLA got 2 attempts at a game-winning field goal late in the game from like 50. I think it was the first one was 55 yards out, and the kid shanked it. But they got a running into the kicker penalty. So they get another try from 50 yards out. Nobody gets close to him, but he still shanks it left. But Utah, their defense was all over the ruins. 10 sacks in this game against Heisman hopeful Brent Hundley. How does the dirt taste, Brett?
Well, you know, I know that we miss on some of our predictions, like say maybe Kirk Cousins or something like that. Mm-hmm. But last week we both said that this game, that Utah was a team that could go in and beat UCLA, and that's exactly what they did. I'm not a bit surprised by this because we've said it from week one right up until today. UCLA was never as good as their ranking, and I'm not at all surprised by this. Great. It's great to see because for the life of me, still don't understand what everybody saw in this UCLA team that I was missing. I just don't get it. And now they're finally exposed, and it's about time.
Yeah. And, I mean, UCLA, they were kind of just hanging around. At the start of the fourth quarter, they get a 93-yard touchdown pass. And that kind of got them back into the game. But when are you going to get 93-yard touchdown passes?
Not that often.
Never.
And you really can't plan on them.
No. Utah was the better team in this game, just flat out. And maybe not offensively because UCLA still managed to put up 460 yards, 269 through the air. But 10 sacks? That's something to look at.
Well, and not only that, but now I think UCLA is ranked where they should be at 18.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I don't have a problem with that. I think that's probably about right where they should be. But, yeah, just Utah, I'm not surprised at all by this. That they're a good football team. I don't know if they're playoff good or whatever, but they're solid enough that you can't take a day off against them.
No, so UCLA moves down to 18, and Utah moves up to 24. And there's now a three-way tie in the Pac-12 South with Utah as being one of those teams. Not something that I think anyone could have predicted. But Well, you know, right there in the mix, at least right now.
Well, you know, when Utah decided to go to the Pac-12, I was like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, you're all right in your smaller conferences and all that, but I don't know if this is the smartest move. But so far, they're doing okay.
No, it the first couple of years was rough for them, and it's still rough for Colorado. But Utah is they're moving up into it. It's going to take a little while for them to kind of acclimate is the word I'm looking for.
Right, exactly.
Acclimate to the Pac-12, but I think they're there now. They're definitely a team that you can't look over them anymore.
No, and it's going to help. You know, the better they do in the Pac-12, the more it helps their recruiting. The better they get, and right on we go down the line. But yeah, I'm not surprised by this. I'm happy it happened, and I like the Utes. I like their uniforms. I like watching them play. So I couldn't be happier about
this. You like their new mountain stripes?
I should say I like their normal helmet, the red one with the shield on the side.
Yeah,
it's hard when I say I like somebody's uniform in college football. Now I could be talking about 35 different uniforms. So I should say I like their normal uniform, the red jerseys, the red helmet, right, and all that. But yeah,
right,
not a bit surprised that UCLA fell to these guys. It just they're not as good as people thought they were, and they're ranked where they should be now.
We'll stay to another ranked Pac-12 team falling as Stanford goes into South Bend and Notre Dame. This was just a sloppy, ugly football game.
Yep.
Neither team could really get anything going for any sustained period of time. And then it started to rain, and nobody could pass, and there was wind. But it kind of went back and forth. Like I said, terribly played by both teams. But late in the game, Everett Golson on a 4th-and-11 gets a late touchdown pass where somehow Stanford just left this guy wide open in the end zone. I have no idea how somebody gets that wide open on a 4th down under 2 minutes to play. But they got it, and Notre Dame survives with a 17-14 win at home over the number 14 ranked Cardinal, and with all the chaos and the win, Notre Dame moves up to number 6 in the rankings.
Yeah, I would probably be more apt to agree with that if Notre Dame had put together I mean, they won the game. There's no doubt about it. Stanford's a good team, but I don't know that it was impressive enough to make Notre Dame number 6, especially in front of Alabama.
Right.
But as I've said before, if they can run out their schedule and go 12-0, I think they've earned a spot. So it wasn't an impressive win, but it was a win against a tough team on the road. So you got to give them credit for that, but I don't think they're number 6.
It helps them with all the chaos that was up front. And, I mean, you look at the teams that are in front of them right now in the rankings, you have 3 SEC teams.
Right.
They're all going to beat up each other. So if Notre Dame's hanging around, and they got to be careful this week, though, not to look ahead. Because they do play North Carolina this week, not a big deal. But the week after is their huge game when they go to Florida State in 2 weeks. So they got to make sure they take care of business this week against the really underperforming, not nearly as good as anyone thought, North Carolina team at home. So.
Well, and that Florida State game, that's going to tell the tale for both of those teams, I think.
Yeah.
You're really going to know an awful lot about both of them after that one's over. But if Notre Dame... I don't know. I mean, I'm just not so sure that I have a lot of faith in them going into Tallahassee and beating the Seminoles. But
no, they've been really sloppy.
Right.
You know, in Everett Golson, he put up 241 yards, but he threw a bad interception. He fumbled the ball when they were driving again. It's just him and Brian Kelly don't always look like they're on the same page either.
Yeah.
When you're watching the games, they're kind of always talking and trying to figure out what's going on, but I don't know.
Well, I'm looking at their resume right now. I mean, really?
No, they haven't beat anyone.
They really don't have any really impressive wins on there.
No.
I mean, you know, okay, back in week 2, maybe shutting out Michigan seemed like a big deal, but now they only got by Syracuse by 16, and that was a home game for them. You know, they beat up on Purdue a little bit, but there's nothing on here that stands out and goes, yeah, they're a dominant football team. They're winning, but... And that's fine in most sports, but in college football, you got to have some style points to go with that, and they just don't have a lot right now.
Yeah. The one big stat to note for Notre Dame, that's actually pretty impressive considering how Stanford plays. Notre Dame held Stanford to its fewest rushing yards, only 47,
wow,
since Jim Harbaugh's first season at Stanford in 2007.
That's pretty impressive because Stanford usually, they're always, well, you've got those gigantic offensive linemen and all that.
But... I mean, especially in a game like this where no one can throw the ball effectively, it's raining, it's wet. That's a game where Stanford should be at the better advantage.
Right.
With their strong physical defense and their offensive line up front in the running game. They just couldn't get anything going. It was just a bad performance by Stanford, too.
But we'll see with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. And we'll see how Stanford can kind of get back on track after this game. They fall all the way down to number 25 in the rankings. 3-2, Stanford is. They're having a slightly down year.
Yeah.
They're not the same Stanford team that we've seen over the last few years, but they're still ranked, and with the way the Pac-12 is going, they got as good a shot as any.
Yeah, and even though they're only 3-2 and they're ranked low in the rankings, they're not a team you want to look past under any circumstances.
They've had a lot of success against Oregon, and that's the only team they really need to beat.
Yeah.
When it comes down to it, is beating Oregon.
Yeah, they just match up well against Oregon for some reason. I mean, I don't know if it's a size thing or what, but Oregon just has a real hell of a time with the Cardinal.
Yeah,
but anyway,
and, I mean, then they host Utah later in the year, and they go to UCLA. Yeah, they still got a lot of interesting games on their schedule. But we move on to the Big Ten, Greg, and Michigan State looked like they were going to have a runaway impressive victory over 19 Nebraska. And then they had to hold on for dear life as Nebraska scored 19 points in the fourth quarter. But Michigan State, they hold on for the 27-22 victory. Nebraska falls down to number 21. And Michigan State, they're still hanging around number 8 in the rankings thanks to all the chaos up front, like we mentioned. But this is what I was talking about before. If they can – they're not wholly impressive, really. But if they can just keep winning their games and things keep – kind of happening the way they're happening in front of them, they've got as good a shot as anybody else to get in the playoff.
Well, it's the thing with this game, what troubles me is I don't think that Nebraska is as a good – I think they're an okay team.
Right.
But at home, Michigan State, with that defense that they have, this game should have never been this close. And you certainly shouldn't have let up 19 points in the fourth quarter. That troubles me about the Spartans. I mean, now last year their defense was just incredible. I'm wondering if it – I mean, who knows? There's a million factors that could go into it. But looking at that game, I think that Michigan State had a chance to really impress and kind of blew it with this one. I mean, they still got the win, but you gave up 19 points in the fourth quarter to a Nebraska team that really isn't that good. And that would trouble me a little bit if I'm voting in the polls or looking at it from a playoff standpoint. But, they're winning their games, and that's what counts.
And they see everything that happens earlier in the day because they're the night game. And so they should know that. I mean, if they get an impressive victory, if they didn't have to hold them by 19, if they win by 19 or 20,
right?
Maybe that would have given them enough to go over fellow one loss team Alabama. And they're still ahead of TCU and Arizona when it comes to undefeated teams. But they were right there. They had an opportunity, and they kind of squandered it.
Exactly. I mean, looking at their schedule, I mean, I think that right now probably the most impressive one they have is against Miami of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But they beat up on Illinois, who's not very good. And it's just like I said, they had a chance to really make a good impression here, and you just described it. They squandered it. It could have been a lot better off, but I think when playoff time comes, people are going to look back at this game and maybe others as we go down on the road, and they're going to look at that and go, I'm not so sure about these guys. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I mean, they've had a bunch of blowout wins, and then that Oregon game where it was a late comeback there by the Ducks.
So right.
They got to learn to just close out some of these games.
Exactly.
And really kind of put the hammer down.
I mean, I don't know what happened. They shut out Nebraska in the first half. Gave up only 3 in the third quarter, and they let 19 up in the fourth. That you just can't have that. Not if you're going to be a contender.
And looking at their schedule, the only game that they have to worry about really is the Ohio State game. And Ohio State's looking better and better by the week, but we'll talk about that in a second. We'll move on down the rankings again. Georgia with a big win over Vanderbilt. And then we mentioned it earlier, but Wisconsin, as we get into those middle rankings that ended up losing a lot of games. Wisconsin, on the road, loses to Northwestern. Really?
Well,
and their Big Ten opener, Wisconsin loses to Northwestern.
Northwestern runs a spread offense, which can give anybody trouble. But
they scored 20 points.
Yeah, I know. What I was going to say is Wisconsin. I think that there are a lot of teams that get ranked on reputation every year, and I think Wisconsin is one of those. They aren't number 17 good even at what they were last week. I don't know where they fell to this week, or if they even fell out of the rankings for that matter. But they did. They dropped out this week. But I'm not at all surprised by this because I've seen them, and I'm looking at them going, they're just not much here to be impressed by. They look good against certain Big Ten teams and all that, but they're just not a very good team.
They have a great running back, Melvin Gordon, 27 carries, 259 yards.
Yeah.
He scored 5 touchdowns, I think, 2 weeks ago in a game. So they can run the ball, but I mean, if you get 259 yards from your running back and you're still losing on the road like that,
right.
That's rough.
Well, not only that, but their offense is such that if they get behind, they aren't built to come back from. Now, yeah. not saying that Northwestern had a big lead on them or anything, but they're not built for that. They're just they fell out of the rankings. They're probably going to stay out at this point because I don't know what they could really do to get back in this venture. Let me see what they've got left.
Winning their games, but
yeah, but
I mean they don't. I mean they don't play any one of them.
No. No.
It's all Nebraska, and Nebraska's, you know, barely hanging on to the rankings
right.
themselves.
So, but yeah, the Big Ten's starting to kind of go back into form of what we thought it was going to be, which would be Michigan State and Ohio State, and yeah. the other ones are kind of falling by the wayside.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that sucks there is, aren't Michigan State and Ohio State in the same division? Or
they're not, because they played for the championship last year, so no.
But remember, they changed the divisions. This year.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, Michigan State and Ohio State are in the same division.
Oh, that sucks.
They're both in the East.
That sucks.
So, by the way, with that win, Northwestern is now leading the Western division of the Big Ten. 2-0 are your Northwestern Wildcats.
You know, you're too young to remember, but it used to be there was a time back when Northwestern, before 1995 basically, where they were just your homecoming game. They lost like 70-0 every single week. It was just they've turned into a decent program.
Yeah. But we'll move on. And actually a game that I don't know how I skipped this. Let's go to the Coliseum, Greg. Let's set the stage. Where USC is up by a decent amount late into the fourth quarter. And I think – let's see. Did they get – yes. So there's 4 minutes left. USC's up pretty big. And then they allow the Arizona State Sun Devils to come in with their backup quarterback, and they got eviscerated by UCLA the week before, as we all remember. ASU scores 3 touchdowns in the final 3:53, including an absolutely unbelievable Hail Mary catch by Jalen Strong, what most Sun Devil fans are now referring to as a Jail Mary, thanks to Jalen Strong. And they knock off the number 16 Trojans 38-34. I had kind of checked out of the game because I was doing other things and I saw that they were down. And then I kept getting these notifications on my phone and I'm like, the hell is happening? And then I got a little thing, like a notification on my phone that said, like, I didn't get any notification for a touchdown, just said US or ASU won. I'm like, wait, how'd they win? What the hell? So I go back and watch it, and this Hail Mary, Mike Brkovici just tosses this, just hucks it up, just throws it basically straight up into the air as far as he can. And the USC defensive backs are going back. It looks like they're trying to field a punt.
Exactly.
And then out of nowhere, Jalen Strong swipes through, catches the ball on the run, and just, you know, 2 steps into the end zone for the Hail Mary catch and the big victory for the Sun Devils, who, you know, after a big loss last week, now they're now tied with Utah and UCLA on top of the Pac-12 South. They're right there with everybody else.
Well, the thing, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm really happy that you guys got a win, but if USC they looked like they'd never seen a Hail Mary before. I mean, one guy, I swear to God, was actually calling for a fair catch. When you say it was like they were covering a punt, it was really exactly like that. And they've got nobody but themselves to blame for this. I mean, they let the Sun Devils back into the game, and then they just stood around on a Hail Mary, and you just can't do that. What do you think the coaching staff at USC had to say to that defensive back who was waving for a fair catch on that pass?
Jesus.
I mean,
like, how do you knock it down?
Can you even fair catch an interception?
No.
I didn't think so. So, I don't know. But, yeah, he was waving his arm like, hey, I got this.
You don't just sit there and wait. When have you ever seen anyone just stand back there and wait for it like that when it's not a punt? Everyone says it, and you hear it from stupid Chris Berman like every week when there's a Hail Mary. What do you do, Tom? Knock it down.
You got to knock it down. I mean, you know, it's true. And it just blows my mind that they just stood there like they had never seen it happen before.
You don't defend a Hail Mary pass every single day, I guess.
Well, you know what? I can guarantee you what they're going to be working on in practice this week a lot is defending Hail Mary passes.
Sure thing. Speaking of Mary, let's go to Maryland as your Ohio State Buckeyes.
As I predicted, had little trouble with the Maryland Terrapins.
Yep, JT Barrett looks like he's moved into a comfortable position there as the starting quarterback for your Buckeyes in a 52-24 beating of Maryland in Ohio State's Big Ten opener.
You know, I was never that worried about Barrett because Brexton Miller, great player and all that, but not the best passer. And I thought if Barrett can come in and pass a little bit better, they'll be okay. The thing that still troubles me is the defense. Now, granted, I don't know. I just don't know that. I mean, Maryland's not bad. They're 4-2, but I just don't like the defense with this Ohio State team. And yeah, they got by a Maryland team, but they've had a lot of problems on defense, and I just don't see that being solved yet. But it's good. They're moving back into where they should be, and they're back in play for the Big Ten. And who knows? They might even end up competing for a playoff spot before it's all said and done. But this is still a pretty flawed football team, despite JT Barrett actually doing a pretty good job.
Yeah. We'll close out the rankings. Oklahoma State with a decent win over Iowa State, 37-20. East Carolina still chugging along. They're 4-1.
That's a good football team, that East Carolina team.
They're a decent football team. You know, if we had an 8-team playoff, I'd throw them in the 8th spot.
Absolutely.
Why the hell not?
Yeah.
Why the hell not?
I heard, though, that this current playoff deal is locked for 7 years, and it's not allowed to be changed, which, is, of course, nonsense. You can change anything.
They said the same thing about the BCS.
Right.
They got out of that. If they really want to change it, they'll go ahead and change it.
You know, as well as I do, that it's only a matter of time, because this thing's going to be so successful this year, they'll go for 8.
Oh, sure. It's only a matter of time until it's 24.
I hope that doesn't happen. I think 8's plenty, and that's where they should stop.
No, but eight's probably the perfect number.
I think so, too. But, yeah, I'd put East Carolina in there. I've liked this team for a long time. Sure. They're fun.
Give them a shot. Why not? And Kansas State with a big win over Texas Tech. We'll run down there was a lot of teams that got knocked off, so these are the rankings as they stand currently. Florida State still on top, as we mentioned. They're undefeated, reigning national champs. They're not going to be there until maybe. I mean, if Auburn could beat Mississippi State this week, maybe you'd jump them just because Auburn's looked better.
Yeah. Well, you know, like you said, that first place vote total for Florida State's been dropping by the week.
Yep. Now it's Florida State 35 first place votes to Auburn's 23.
And I'm pulling up last week's rankings. Last week it was 27 Florida State, Oregon 13, Alabama 13, and Auburn had no first place votes.
Right. And so now that everyone else is kind of losing, it's becoming very clear who the best teams in college football are. And I think Auburn's it. You know, I would love to see Mississippi State win just for the fun of it, but I think Auburn's the better team.
I think so, too. But, you know, that Mississippi State offense, man, do they score points. And
they do.
And that's going to be a test. That's going to be a hell of a game.
It will indeed. Mississippi State and Ole Miss tied for number 3 in the rankings. Baylor at number 5.
Yeah, that's talking about being overranked.
6.
Yeah.
What, Baylor?
I think so, yeah. I think so, yeah.
No, they're just – it's because they're undefeated.
Right, but
– And they generally score –
70
points.
Yeah, but you know what? That's the nice thing about the playoff this year is they're going to take into consideration stuff like that. I don't see Baylor making the playoff even if they go undefeated. Maybe if they do go undefeated, then sure, maybe they deserve it. But right now, I don't think they're the number 5 team in the country.
Notre Dame, number 6. Alabama falls down to number 7. Michigan State moves up to 8. TCU jumps all the way up from 25 to 9. Arizona, number 10. All the hate that I've directed toward UCLA over these first few weeks because of their asinine ranking. Congratulations, Arizona. Not that I didn't like you before. Well, I didn't like you before. Now I don't like you even more.
Well, here's the thing.
You don't deserve that.
We both agreed that UCLA was ridiculously overrated. I didn't think it could be any worse than that. And then along comes Arizona. And, I mean, this makes the UCLA ratings look sane by comparison.
It's got to just because –
How does that happen? They jump
the Pac-12 right now. I guess that's it.
Well, let's look at last week. I mean, wouldn't they even get votes last week?
No, they were they were 29th.
They got 4. Yeah, so they jumped 19 spots based on one win.
Right. Like I said, it was the biggest entry into the rankings in the poll's history. No team has ever gone from outside the top 25 to number 10.
I think
the biggest jump before that was like 14.
Here's something else to consider with this, okay? Last week and others receiving votes, because Arizona wasn't ranked last week, it was Arizona State with 97, South Carolina with 61, Clemson with 52, and then Arizona at 43, 3 points ahead of Marshall, who I think should be ranked and isn't, but...
Yeah, Marshall's undefeated, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, now, granted, I don't think they're, you know, any real threat to, like, win the national championship or anything.
No, but they should at least be in the top 25.
They're probably better than... I'd like their chances against Nebraska. I'd like Marshall's chances against Georgia Tech.
Well, Georgia Tech is undefeated now.
I love Georgia Tech.
That's why Georgia Tech's up there.
That triple option offense, I just love that shit.
I can't watch it.
I love it.
Well, especially, I can watch it when they're good, but when they're bad, it's just like, ugh. It's like, you're so terrible, do something else. Like, you know, try to play football. Don't do that. Number 11, Oklahoma falls down from 4. Oregon falls from 2 to 12. Georgia stays pat at number 13. Texas A&M falls to 14. Your Ohio State Buckeyes back up in the mix at number 15. Oklahoma State 16. Kansas State 17. UCLA, where they should be, at number 18. East Carolina, they're up to 19.
Yeah.
Good for them. ASU back into the rankings at 20. Nebraska falls down to number 21. They only lose 2 spots. I don't agree with that either.
I don't think they should be ranked myself, but they're 5-1, and you're going to get in on your record. Name and record is what's going to get you in there, but if East Carolina and Nebraska play tomorrow, I would bet heavily on East Carolina because I think they're the better football team.
Georgia Tech undefeated, one of the few undefeated teams left in the country, number 22. 23, Missouri. 24, Utah. They had no ranking at all before last week, and now they're 24. And Stanford just holds on to that 25 spot. Before we move on, I want to give a congratulations to Washington State quarterback Connor Halliday, breaking the NCAA record for passing yards, 734 passing yards, 6 touchdowns, and Wazoo still lost to Cal, 60-59. This is what I'm talking about when it comes to the Pac-12. The bottom, like these teams are supposed to be bad. Holy cow, are they entertaining as hell?
Well, you know, think about, okay, to put his passing
and
numbers.
Cal, in, by the way, Cal, 2-1 in the Pac-12. They're on top of the Pac-12 North right now. So look out for the Cal Golden Bears.
But to put his numbers in perspective for that passing game, a guy like Brian Hoyer of the Browns, it would take him 3 games to pass for that many yards.
Right.
God, what a game that was. 700 yards plus.
He broke the 24-year-old FBS record.
Who had the previous record?
The old FBS record. And the overall NCAA record was 730, set by Old Dominion's Taylor Heinicke. Old Dominion.
Old Dominion, that powerhouse.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's insane that your quarterback can throw for 6 touchdowns, 734 yards, and you end up losing because you missed a field goal at the end of the game. Like, yeah. Come on, Wazoo. What are you doing up there? But we'll move on to next week. Like I said, Washington State, they go to Stanford, and you know, Stanford, if they can't get something going, Washington State's gonna you know, score some points. I mean, the line is Stanford by 18 right now, but
well, think about it like
Washington
this:
State can score, man.
If he passed for half as many yards, he would throw for 360 next week.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah,
half as many yards, and he'd be at 360.
If he can throw for 360 against Stanford, Wazoo's got a shot.
Sure.
I'll give him a shot. We'll move on to Saturday, where Florida State plays Syracuse in the Carrick Dome. Womp womp. Some of these games, again, just amazing. We're starting to get into the nitty-gritty, and I love it. Number 2, Auburn at number 3, Mississippi State. We talked all about that. Auburn opens as a 3-point favorite on the road at the Bulldogs.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Number 3, Ole Miss, they go to College Station to take on the Texas A&M Aggies.
Holy cow.
Texas A&M, a 2-point favorite right now. TCU, number 9 now in the rankings. They go to Baylor, number 5.
God.
Defeated teams going at it. North Carolina goes to Notre Dame. Alabama goes on the road to Arkansas.
That shouldn't be a problem.
No. Michigan State goes to Purdue. Texas, Oklahoma at the Cotton Bowl for their yearly Red River rivalry.
Yeah.
They're probably going to wear those stupid gold logos and crap again. Because they give it a golden cowboy hat, because why the hell not? Then another interesting game here. We got Oregon and UCLA in the Rose Bowl. Oregon opens as a 3-point favorite on the road against the Bruins. Number 13, Georgia on the road at number 23, Missouri.
That might be a pretty good game.
This is the game of the weekend, Greg. Our Duke Blue Devils.
Yeah, I saw this.
0-1 in the ACC. They lost their ACC opener to Miami, Florida. They go on the road to face undefeated number 22, Georgia Tech. Blue Devils.
I'm liking our Blue Devils in that one.
Looking at 5-1.
Yeah.
Record, hey. Go Duke. USC goes on the road to Tucson, Arizona next week to take on the Wildcats. USC opens as a 3-point favorite on the road in Tucson, despite being, you know, Arizona being
okay. Well, okay, let's back up a second. How in the hell can you be a home underdog and be ranked number 10 in the country?
Beats me, man. They are. That was your insane bonkers, off-the-wall weekend in college football. We'll move on as the NFL tried to replicate what college provided, but just no way. It was still a pretty interesting week in the NFL. But let's start on Thursday real quick. We'll get your Green Bay Packers out of the way, Greg. And they were just all over the Vikings from the start, and it was just another Thursday night game.
Another one of those really exciting Thursday night games. Not a single one of them has been decided by less than 20 points, I think, is what I read somewhere.
Yeah. The margin of victory in the four Thursday games, not including the opener, the short week Thursday games, has been 31 points. And just for comparison, in all other NFL games this season, the average margin of victory is 12.
That tells the tale right there.
Well, yeah, and so everyone's rightly called that these games have been crappy. And even Teddy Bridgewater, after the game, said if the game was on Sunday, he would have played. Mm-hmm. He would have allowed me more time to rehab and treat the injury. So maybe the Vikings are better without Christian Ponder at quarterback.
Right.
Which probably are. But unfortunately, we played on Thursday. So the NFL, they heard all of our complaints. So they sent out some tweets. One of their PR people sent out some tweets to let everyone know that, hey, these games aren't that bad, guys.
Okay.
So since 2006, the average margin of victory in Thursday games is 13.6.
Okay. But in 2006, they weren't playing every Thursday.
Right.
Right.
In non-Thursday games, it's 12 points. Since 2012, home teams in non-Thursday games have a better win than home teams on Thursday. So they're saying home teams on Sunday have better win percentages than home teams on Thursday, saying that road teams are coming in and they're beating the home teams. That's exciting, right?
Not when it's by 30 points. There's nothing exciting about a 30-point blowout. I mean, even as a Packers fan, I was like, okay, this is fun. I turned it off at halftime and went on and did something else.
Despite all of our complaints about it, something to be pointed out, that Thursday game, the Viking-Packers game, drew nearly twice as many viewers as both baseball playoff games that night combined.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all. Not at all surprised. Yeah. They can try to spin it however they want there at the NFL offices. These games are not good.
No.
They're just not good at all.
No, but it's good for you as your Packers. Move on to 2-0 at home and 3-2 overall.
Starting to look a little bit better. As my employee Aaron Rodgers stated, it's a long season. Relax.
Just five letters, guys. R-E-L-A-X.
Now, normally, I'm not big on him talking to his boss that way, but I'll let it slide this time because he had a good point.
But we'll move on to Sunday, and we'll start with some of the early games. We'll start with my Indianapolis Colts as really a tight game. Not the most well-played game, but hey. They were able to not let Joe Flacco chuck it downfield several times. I mean, literally there were a couple times where like he just started scrambling. I'm like, oh, no, he's just going to throw it deep. And he threw it deep, and it's like, oh, he's throwing it deep. Torrey Smith is under it. I'm like, of course Torrey Smith is under it. Who else would be under it? It's only Torrey Smith.
Well, the only
there were two safeties behind him, so they did their job.
Well, either him or it would be Steve Smith because I hadn't played Steve Smith all year on my fantasy team until I played him this week, and of course he did absolutely nothing.
Right. Owen Daniels was the leading receiver for the Ravens on this day. Five receptions, 30 yards.
Of course he was.
But Andrew Luck had another very good day at the office. 32 of 49, 312. Only one touchdown pass. But they hold on. 10 points for the Ravens there in the fourth quarter, but the Colts hold on for a 20-13 win. And they're fine. The Colts are okay.
Well, speaking of Andrew Luck, I'm going to say this every chance I get. To those of you who back, was it 2 years ago, were like, Colin Kaepernick, we'd rather have him than Andrew Luck. Really?
No. Really?
I mean, of all the new guys, would you still rather have RG3? He looks great in those commercials. You don't know where the hell he is other than that, though. Mm-hmm.
If the Colts had any semblance of a running game and a little bit better defense, they'd be undefeated.
Yeah.
Andrew Luck makes just everything work. It's amazing how good he can be.
Well, just think though, if he had a running game, where so you couldn't defend the pass as tightly as you do, where they would be. You're right.
And even then, the Colts play action pass still works pretty well because Andrew Luck's just a master at running it. Now the Colts did turn the ball over four times, but they still
won.
Right, but you know the running game, I rag on it, but it was at least slightly effective. They were able to hold on to the ball and control the clock. But you know, Ahmad Bradshaw went 15 rushes for 68 yards, and that was our leading rusher.
How did our guy Trent Richardson do this week?
How did Trent Richardson do? Let's look real quick.
I'm going to say it was 13 rushes for 17 yards.
Trent Richardson, 9 carries for 37 yards.
Hey, that's over 4 yards a carry.
Yeah. He had he had one run of 14 yards.
So. Oh, okay. Well, that kind of kills the whole yards per carry thing then.
Yeah. But yeah, it's they're fine. They're cruising along. They're just going to be a-okay, everybody. Don't you worry about the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, we're past the quarter mark of the season now. Now things are starting to, I think, kind of straighten out, and we're kind of seeing who's what.
Right. And you know, some of these teams it takes a minute to kind of get yourself acclimated.
Well, it's I said it a couple times already. If some of these losses that we'd seen in the first 2 weeks had happened in week 9 or 10, I don't think anybody would make a big deal out of them. It's just that when they take place, and we all overreact to the first month of the season, it's just the way it is.
Yeah, and so they actually go into the Thursday night game against Houston, both teams 3-2, as we'll talk about the Texans here in a minute. I don't know what Vegas is thinking. Indianapolis is only a 3-point favorite. They need to set these Thursday lines to like 14 points at the least. Either side, I don't care who it is, because that's just how this thing works. You know, it's
where is this game? Is it in Indy or in Houston?
In Houston. Houston.
You know, God, this is going to sound crazy. I think this could actually be a good game. I think. But then again, it'd probably be 42-17, whoever wins.
we'll see. We'll see what happens. Probably one of the more interesting results earlier in the day was the Bears and the Panthers. Now, the Bears went up early, 14-7, and they were up 21-14 at half. And then in the second half, Jay Cutler just kind of, I don't know, he lost his composure, threw a couple interceptions there, two interceptions that it gave the Panthers a short field, and Cam Newton, a couple touchdowns to Greg Olsen, they were able to overcome and beat the Bears in Charlotte 31-24.
Let's go back a week with Jay Cutler. I don't know if it was last week or the week before when they played the Packers.
Yeah.
Same exact thing. Had a pretty good first half, came out in the second half, threw three interceptions, and that was that. Mm-hmm. And now he does it again against the Panthers. I'm going to rescind my original, this Bears team could be a playoff team. This is not a good football team.
No.
And I'm not one of those people that doesn't like Jay Cutler. I wish him all the success in the world, but he's not the answer, Bears fans. Sorry. He's the best quarterback you've probably ever had, but he's not getting the job done for you. Sorry.
Yeah. Where to go? I had a little note here. The Bears have been outscored 34-3 in the second half in the last 2 weeks.
Right. Exactly. That's my point. I don't know what happens at halftime. Maybe Jim Trestman's not giving, or Mark Trestman's not giving out the best halftime speeches. I don't know what, but
The Bears 3 turnovers in the fourth quarter, which all led to all the Panthers' points there in the fourth quarter.
Right.
It's just the Bears were passing a lot short, and Cutler only went 1 of 5 on passes thrown 15 yards downfield. Both of his interceptions came on long passes too. So,
well, going back to your Colts for a second, rare is the week in the NFL where you're going to turn the ball over 4 times and still win the football game.
Right.
That is such an anomaly. And the Bears have been outscored 30, whatever it was, to 3 because they're handing the ball over constantly in the second half the past 2 games.
Yep. 4 turnovers for the Bears in this game. So, yeah. But the Panthers, they're back on track, too. And, thanks to I think we're kind of flipping on which of these divisions is the worst in football. I'm going to put the NFC South up there for nomination as one of the worst divisions of football at this point in time.
Because, yeah.
Ugh, God, we'll talk more about them in a second, but Jesus. But we'll move on to another one of your teams, Greg. As it looked like your irrational confidence for the Titans was going to pay off, at least after the first half.
Of course it was.
Titans were up 28-10 at half.
Of course they're going to show up and be my irrational confidence Titans the 1 week I don't want them to, which is against the Browns. Yeah.
The Browns were down 25 points.
Yes.
But the Browns set a record for straight-up comeback and an NFL record for a road comeback as they rally from 25 points down to beat the Titans in Nashville 29-28. Brian Hoyer, 292, 3 touchdowns. What a day for your Cleveland Browns, Greg.
This is normally the kind of stuff that happens to them. They're normally on the other end of this kind of comeback.
Mm-hmm.
It was great to see. I tell you, I still don't think they're a good team, but they try hard, and they're not going to be an easy out for anybody. I don't think they're a serious playoff threat or anything, but I like the way they're playing football this year. I didn't think that Mike Pettine was the right choice as coach. But so far, so good. They're, again, not good, But they've been competitive in every game. I think they said that every one of their games has been decided by, like, I don't know, 3 points or whatever it is. But
yep.
I like the way they're playing football. And right now, I can't see a reason in the world to even consider putting Johnny Manziel in as quarterback. And when Josh Gordon comes back, who knows? If they can hang tough until then, who knows?
Rams and the Eagles. And the Eagles, they were up early, early, early. Strong defensive and special teams play by the Eagles. And they had to hold on late as the Rams started to make some comeback there in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
14 points in the fourth. But the Eagles hold on for a 34-28 win. Austin Davis, quarterback for the Rams, 375, 3 touchdowns.
No kidding.
Yeah, so good day for him, but not enough to overcome the Eagles.
I tell you, this Eagles team's starting to worry me a little bit.
They're not crisp.
No, and I thought they would be more dominant than this, especially against weaker competition. But they're having some issues with teams they shouldn't be having trouble with.
No, that's for sure. But hey, you know, you're winning the games, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's not like there's a ranking system in the NFL.
No style
points in
the NFL.
You're on top of your division.
Exactly.
So they're still on top of the division. For now, we'll talk a little bit more about that, unfortunately, in a minute. The Giants with a big win over the Falcons, and the Falcons 0-3 on the road. They're awful on the road. The Giants, hey, they're 3-2 now. They're not terrible.
That's surprising.
2-1 at home.
Maybe it's not surprising. We said at the beginning of the year that they were good enough to definitely be better than they were last year. But 3-2,
yeah, three and two. They're a game out of first place.
I'm surprised by that. I am. Yeah,
I rescinded my prediction of maybe they'll fall backwards into a playoff spot earlier. Hey, they're hanging around. They're right up there with anybody else in the NFC right now.
Right.
But the Falcons are terrible, and so is the rest of their division. I was looking at the score, the bottom line that kept coming across for this Buccaneers-Saints game, and I was just floored. Like, I think we've established the Saints aren't very good.
Right.
The Buccaneers aren't very good either. But you think the Saints, they're at home. They should just blow away the Buccaneers. And the Buccaneers were up for a good majority of this football game.
Right.
But the Saints were able to tie it late. And get the touchdown in overtime.
The Saints team, I mean, it's not even...
The Saints are bad.
Yeah, I mean, it was like we went from, okay, they're not a Super Bowl team, which we both predicted they would be, to, okay, probably a wild card team, to they're just not good. I don't know what their problem is, but they're just not a good team. The offense, yeah, they scored 37 on Tampa Bay, but for the Buccaneers, as bad as they are, to still be in that game as late as they were, that's just especially in New Orleans. That's just a bad football team. They've got problems.
No, and Jimmy Graham got hurt in the game for the Saints. They also lost their center, Jonathan Goodwin. So maybe that helped with the offensive non-production. But still, the Tampa Bay defense was doing a pretty darn good job against the Saints. I mean, playing the Saints in New Orleans in the Dome, Drew Brees and that offense can get going. But Drew Brees, 3 interceptions.
Yeah.
And that almost cost the Saints the football game. And
they should not have had this much trouble with Tampa Bay at home. They just shouldn't have.
I mean, Mike Glennon, decent job, 249, 2 touchdowns.
Well, but I thought all along that he was the guy they needed to start, and not one of the McCowns down there. So at least they've got that part right. They've been more competitive since they went to Glennon. I'll say that.
Yeah, that division is awful. Carolina, they're decent, but Atlanta, terrible. New Orleans, awful. Tampa Bay, even worse.
It's not a good division.
No. I really want to rescind my New Orleans Super Bowl pick.
Oh, so do I. I wanted to change that after the first week.
Yeah, this is – I mean, if they can barely beat the Buccaneers at home, then you're sorry. Like, when they start struggling at home, then you know the Saints are having some major
issues.
What's
their record now?
2-3.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I just – It's
0-3 on the road and 2-0 at home.
Yeah, I mean, but you know what? I don't think either one of their home ones have been that impressive. If I remember, I don't remember who they beat the first time, but it wasn't like what you thought it would be.
Who did they play at home?
Was it Minnesota?
Yes.
But?
Yeah.
Okay. But
20-9, they beat them.
Yeah, but come on. That was Minnesota coming right off the Adrian Peterson thing and all that, and the Saints at home. And it's not like the Vikings are like the old Purple People Eater days back in the old days. This is
definitely not.
But, yeah, the Saints
they're not even as good as the Brett Favre days from years back. But we'll move on. And, you know, We were vehement about this after the first week. We did not want to talk about the Dallas Cowboys this season.
They're not giving us any choice.
They're playing extremely well.
Right.
The Cowboys with a very tight overtime win with Dan Bailey. He missed the potential winning field goal at the end of regulation. Gets it in overtime for the 20-17 win against Houston in Dallas. Tony Romo, 324 yards, two touchdowns. DeMarco Murray, 31 carries for 136 yards. You know, we've been waiting for the Cowboys to run the ball first, and they've been doing it all season, and it's led to victories. They're playing very, very well.
That's the thing. That's the trick with the Cowboys, is that they've got one of the best running backs in football. I think I saw a stat where he was it number two behind Adrian Peterson in the most yards since a certain point or something like that? Yeah. But you can't depend on Tony Romo to do it by himself, because when you do, we see what happens. Mm-hmm. But if they run first, what are they, 4-1 now?
4-1.
I mean, you know, they're not, like I said, they're not giving us a choice. We have to talk about them. They're a good football team, and I didn't think they were going to be any good at all. But they're already halfway to being .500 this season, which is what we thought they would be at best. But they're playing good football, and if they keep. They just got to play smart football now, and don't be dumb about it. Don't start thinking, okay, don't start trying to outthink yourselves. You've got a good plan or a good game plan that's working. Stick with it. You'll be all right.
DeMarco Murray is the first Cowboy to gain at least 100 yards in 5 consecutive games.
Ever?
Emmitt Smith only did it for 4 games.
What about Tony Dorsett?
Nope.
Wow. Okay.
DeMarco Murray, the first Cowboys running back to run for 100 yards in 5 consecutive games.
Wow.
That's something.
That's the ticket. That's your guy. That's what you got to do.
On the Texans side of things, I watched a good majority of this game, and Dallas was just unable to get the Texans off the field on third down for a lot of it. I guess this was kind of later in the game, as Houston only went 4-for-13 on third down, but I'm just not impressed.
With the Texans?
No.
Yeah, they're better.
They're 3-2. They played a tight game in this one. And I think that's mostly just because of J.J. Watt and the defense for a good majority of it. But I don't know.
They're better, but I don't think that they're.
Ryan Fitzpatrick is.
Well, that's your main problem right there. Yeah, you're not going to win. You're not going to go far in the NFL with Ryan Fitzpatrick as your quarterback.
But. Right. That's why this game on Thursday against the Colts is really interesting, because I still don't know what to make of Houston. I don't know if they're better. I mean, I guess they're a little bit better, but I don't know if they're good enough to beat the Colts right now. But it is one of those Thursday games, so even if Houston wins, you almost throw it out the window because you don't know how to handle it.
It's really hard to get anything out of a Thursday night game.
Right. But I think of all the Thursday games we've had so far, this is the most interesting of them. The Colts and Texans, both 3-2.
It's got the potential to be a good game. Will it be? Probably not, but it's got the potential to be.
Yeah,
but I'm with you. I think the Texans are definitely improved from last year. I don't think they can win or lose 14 straight now. But I don't think they're a real threat to the Colts to win that division at this point. Mm-hmm. I thought that if there any team was going to be, it might have been the Titans. But
yeah.
They've clearly shown they're not going to do it. So I think the Texans will. They're probably an 8-win team, I would say.
Yeah. The other thing to come out of this game is, look, Cowboys fans. You need to step up and buy some damn football tickets. Did you see this game?
Yeah, I did. When I was watching it, when it was Houston did something and the cheers, I'm like, I thought this was in Dallas. I mean, that's how bad it was.
Yeah. No, here's some pictures of it. And I mean, we saw it against the 49ers week one where the crowd was red. And you think with Houston, like, okay, Houston's close, but they're not a big traveling fan base. It damn near looked like that 49ers game. There was so much red in the stands.
Right.
And even Dallas, and even Tony Romo finally called out the fans. Said, I was a little surprised by the number of Houston fans. Today we played on the road. We had to go to a silent count. That was the first time I had to do that throughout the game at home.
Well, that's the thing. Like
we need to do a better job as a team, as a fan base, to make sure how big of a difference playing at home is. I think going forward, I'm going to press the issue. We might just need to tighten up selling our tickets.
That's the thing. Like I said, when I was watching that game, Houston did something, and the crowd was so loud. I took a second. I said, is this in Houston?
Yeah.
I mean, I really thought it was, because it looked like a Houston crowd and the shots that you saw. And yeah. That's surprising in Dallas. I mean, just that would have, I mean, it used to be the other way around. The Cowboys, if they were on the road, especially like in Arizona, it was like a home game for them. Not anymore.
And even if this game was in Houston, you'd probably have more Cowboys fans there. But it just, I don't know if it's all these Cowboys fans are selling their tickets because they can get a good price for them, or they're just not buying them, or what the deal is.
I don't either, but yeah, it looked like a home game for the Texans. Absolutely. It was crazy. And with the Cowboys being what they've been over all these years, that's just surprising to me. That's just, I've never seen that happen before.
Yeah. We'll move on to some of these other games. We'll move to Detroit, where the Lions.
They're the Lions.
They're still the Lions as the Bills. Did you see the end of this game?
Yes.
With the trading of missed field goals. So the Bills go down. They have an opportunity to win the game on a field goal. Oh, they miss. But, hey, they missed from such a far distance back that the Lions had a short field. So they get a short field. And they move up just, you know, 20 yards or so. And the Lions, they get a shot to win this game. And they miss the field goal. So then you come back down with the Bills and Kyle Orton leading the charge. And the Bills finally get the field goal to go through as time expires. And the Buffalo Bills circle the wagons. The Buffalo Bills tied for first place in the AFC East currently with a 17-14 win in Detroit.
All I got to say about this game is this to the Detroit Lions. You lost a home game to a team that was quarterbacked by Kyle Orton. That's all needs to be said about that. That we talked about it with Detroit for the past two seasons now. Their problem is they don't win the games they're supposed to win, and this is one of those games. This is a game they had to win because these are the teams you're supposed to beat. Buffalo, what are they, 3-2 now?
3-2.
I don't think it's a good 3-2. I don't want to call it lucky, but it's not a 3-2 where you go, yeah, this team's got a shot at making the playoffs. Uh-huh. Detroit's got to win this game. If they're going to be legitimate in the NFC North, and nope, they couldn't do it.
No, the Lions kickers this season, Nate Freeze and Alex Henry have been their two kickers so far this season. 4 of 12 kicking field goals, including 0-for-3 by Henry on Sunday.
4-for-12 is great if it's a three-game stretch in baseball. That's really good. It's not so hot as a field goal kicker.
Yeah, that's – again, we talked about it with the Alabama game. Kickers aren't necessarily important until they're the most important position on the field all the time.
Exactly, yep.
And, I mean, if you have a bad kicker, it can make or break you. And you saw it with this game here. I mean, 0-for-3, if they make two of those field goals, they win.
Yeah.
One of those field goals earlier, they win.
All he's got to do is do the 65% thing, which is not even that great for a field goal kicker. If he can even reach that level, they win this football game.
Yeah.
But the Lions just they're just the Lions again this year. I mean, they looked good for a couple of games, but you can't lose this game to the Buffalo Bills, especially with Kyle Orton, a quarterback. Come on. At home, can't do it.
Yep, and Jim Schwartz, as the defensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, you know, Jim Schwartz, the old coach of your Detroit Lions, he orchestrated 6 sacks by the Bills defense on Matt Stafford in this game.
I don't even know what to say.
I don't know either. But also, Kyle Orton, fun fact. Kyle Orton has now won 8 straight games when tied or trailing in the fourth quarter or overtime.
Wait a minute. Maybe I'm being too harsh on Kyle Orton, Mayor. Maybe he's Joe Montana on the wings and we just don't know it. Another thing about this game that I didn't care for was they carried Schwartz off the field afterwards.
Supposedly, I heard a rumor. I don't know if it's true or not. Supposedly, Jim Schwartz asked the team to do that.
Oh, for God's sakes. It was bad enough on its own.
I don't know how true or not that is. It was just something I heard. Could be incorrect. But, I mean, if that's the case,
that's a real douche move on his part.
It really is.
But, yeah.
With Kyle Orton winning these games, are we done with EJ Manuel, do you think?
I don't know. We'll see. Looking at it, who would you rather have at this point, E.J. Manuel or Kyle Orton?
Orton, I guess.
Yeah, probably Orton just because he's got the experience.
The Steelers, they were pretty close to losing to another bad Florida team.
Yeah, this is another one I really missed the boat on with the Steelers. They're not good either.
No, they pulled it out. Only the Jaguars had just three field goals, one in each of the three quarters, first three quarters, and with a 17-9 win. They got the seven in the fourth quarter to extend what was a 1-point lead.
Is Blake Bortles still alive?
Yeah, apparently okay. He's still alive and ticking.
So far, so good.
6-191. Yeah, he's not dead yet. I don't know how many.
Does he still know his name and all that, his kids and everything?
You know, it's possible.
Okay.
Also, later in the afternoon, the Cardinals and the Broncos. This was it started off as a really good game, pretty close by both sides, but. Late in the second quarter, you know, as it looks like the teams are just going to go into halftime, Peyton Manning hits Demaryius Thomas for a 76-yard touchdown pass. And that just swung the game right in the Broncos' favor. And they rolled in the second half for a 41-20 win at home over Arizona, handing the Cardinals their first loss.
I didn't think the Cardinals would win this game. I thought they might keep it closer. But when he hit that touchdown pass, I was like, this is it. Forget it. So I'm not going to write off the Cardinals because of this loss, but God damn, is Peyton Manning good.
Yeah, I mean, 568 yards of offense, 479 and four touchdowns on this day. And he also threw his 500th touchdown pass in this game. Only the second quarterback to do that. I think he's 16 or so behind Brett Favre right now.
Yeah, he'll probably break that in the next couple of weeks. No, not 16, probably like the next month or so, but...
He'll probably be the NFL touchdown leader by the end of the season.
Yeah, I'll definitely.
I think that is. I don't know what the number is.
He's probably going to be around to throw to get to 600. I would think. You know, that'll be tight. But I think he'll get there. I really do.
Maybe.
It just blows my mind. I mean, he's just amazing. More impressive because of the age he is at this point that he's still able to do the stuff he does.
He's still effective.
Exactly.
So that's all you could ask for. And what was probably the most entertaining game there of the later games. Chiefs 49ers, a really tight kind of back and forth game, but the 49ers able to pull it out late in the fourth quarter with a 22-17 win, and Colin Kaepernick beats his old battery mate Alex Smith.
Alex Smith threw an interception in that fourth quarter that was as dumb as it was crippling to their chances in that game.
Yeah, just, the one turnover for the Chiefs in the game.
I still think the 49ers aren't that good. I think the Chiefs are decent. The 49ers, again, had a hell of a time with the team they should have beaten pretty easily if they're the Super Bowl contenders everybody thinks they're supposed to be.
But with the win and with Arizona losing, now San Francisco is they're a half game behind the Cardinals and Seahawks in the NFC West.
Yeah.
They're 3-2, both the Cardinals and Seahawks are 3-1.
I'm still not sold on the 49ers. They're still getting excited about scoring 10 points in the second half. That's not good.
And then the last of the late afternoon games, the Chargers with a 31-0 drubbing of the Jets. Michael Vick played the whole entire second half there for the Jets. But they still said that they're starting Geno Smith next week again. So I don't know what they're doing.
If they're not trying to win now, then just say that. The San Diego team looks pretty good. I mean, the Jets were the first team to be shut out this year, which with their offense isn't terribly surprising, but San Diego, I think, is the real deal. I think they're going to be a tough team to contend with throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, the Chargers are on a roll here. And
when do they play the Broncos?
They're tied with Indy, or not Indy, Denver.
When do they play each other?
They play each other in week 8 in Denver. Oh, and that's a Thursday night game, too.
Oh, God. Well, see, there you go. You can't really take anything away from it.
No. That sucks.
It does.
That's going to be a big game.
It's
when it
a
comes
huge
to the
game.
AFC West.
Yeah, and
they're both going to be probably 6-1 at that point.
Yeah, and you're throwing it away on a Thursday night. I mean, it'll get huge ratings. That's great, but it's not going to be quality football.
No, I guess you can only hope that both teams are really healthy going into it, or they both have blowout wins the week before, so that they're fine. I guess I don't know.
Yeah,
that's
a
sucks.
Shame.
Yeah. But we'll move on to the Sunday night game, and this is kind of what we all expected. The demise of the New England Patriots, and specifically Tom Brady, greatly exaggerated.
Yeah.
If you heard Bill Belichick all week, people were asking him, what's going on with Tom Brady? What's going on? And he's like, we're preparing for Cincinnati. He gave that same answer at least 12 times in one press conference.
There were people out there that really thought that and still believe that they're gonna sit Brady down for Jimmy Garoppolo.
Please.
Are they? I mean, are you out of your minds? We talked about it a week or two ago. Tom Brady, even at this point in his career, is still probably the third best option in the NFL. Fourth, somewhere in there. Come on. Yeah. Stop with that nonsense.
Yeah, that's
idiotic.
But Tom Brady, 23 of 35, 292, two touchdowns. Rob Gronkowski, welcome back to the NFL.
Yeah, no kidding.
Six receptions, 100 yards, and a TD. And the running game for the Patriots was really effective also. Stephon Ridley, 27 rushing yards. 27 carries, 113 yards and a touchdown. And the Bengals, this is something that some of the Bengals fans have pointed out. It was just kind of a perfect storm against them because for whatever reason, the Bengals aren't great when it comes to Sunday night games in primetime. And the Patriots were, of course, primed for a rebound game because of how badly they played on Monday.
Right.
You knew they were going to come out like this.
But
anything to take away from the Bengals in this game? Three turnovers.
I will say this about the Bengals. Yeah, they might have trouble on Sunday nights, but they also have trouble in big games. And,
yeah.
And I was sold on them until this. And again, I'm not saying you should go into New England and win, but you can't go in and lose 41 to whatever it was, 43-17. You can't do that if you're going to be a contender. I mean, I know the Patriots were fired up. But if you're a legitimate contender in the AFC, you can't let this happen. And that's exactly what they let happen. I don't know if it's coaching. I don't know what it is. But they fold. I think even Tony Dungy, who used to be my favorite player and is now my favorite idiot, even said they look like the Bengals of the playoffs tonight. And that's exactly what they looked like. You can't let that happen.
Yeah. But so those three turnovers were all fumbles. So Andy Dalton did fine, I guess. But and then, of course, the Monday night game, I didn't even watch it because it was kind of a foregone conclusion for me as the Seahawks go on the road to Washington. And, yeah, it was never really a game. It was only a 10-point win, 27-17. But Seattle, you know, Russell Wilson's really good. Seattle's really good.
Russell
Kirk Cousins, 283 and two TDs, but, you know.
Yeah, well, that's against that Seattle defense.
Russell Wilson also 122 rushing yards.
Right, that's what I wanted to bring up. Man, did he look good running the ball last night? It's unfortunately you can't do that a lot because he'll end up getting killed. But he is dangerous in the open field with the football, and he did a great job running the ball last night.
Yeah. So again, the NFL weekend was fine, but nothing compared to the college weekend. I think that kind of wraps it up. It's been an exhausting podcast today, only because just a crazy football weekend. We spent over an hour talking about college football.
Yeah.
We don't do that often.
No, usually it's the NFL gets most of our attention, but this week, well, you couldn't not talk about the college football weekend. It was insane.
Couldn't ignore it at all. But I think that's going to do it. For Greg, I'm Zach. This has been Basically a Football Show. Follow us on our platforms. Listen to our other Basically a Podcasts. We're taking over the world little by little.
Little by little. One listener at a time.
And we'll be back on Thursday to talk more stuff.